You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Jodie Foster was at the Oscars and she came on with crutches. I'm like, someone had a scissoring accident.
Oh my God. What happened?
She didn't stretch.
You know?
I don't know.
She's in an intramural kickball league, so maybe that's something.
Really?
I don't know. It's like, sounds just gay enough for Jodie Foster.
Jodie Foster, yeah.
I'm ducking out, you're ducking out. Let's duck out together, see what it's all about.
Ducking out, ducking out, ducking out, ducking out.
Hi, and welcome to Dyking Out, the podcast that proves queer women really are funnier. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
And I'm Sarah York.
And today we'll be dyking out with Brooklyn-based singer-songwriter Alyssa Robbins on the topic of sex education.
Oh my.
I am excited for this one. Before we get into it, a few quick announcements. We were featured in a podcast roundup by Logo's news and pop culture site called New Now Next.
Indeed.
They declared that we've entered a golden age of queer women in podcasting, and I would agree. I think our entry into the podcast landscape has really sealed that golden age of queer voices.
Yeah, I think we're the ones.
Yep, we tipped the scale. And before it was just like a silver age podcasting. And if you like our queer voices in particular, please go over to patreon.com/dykingout and become a patron for our podcast. And in return, you'll get exclusive content, pins, temporary tattoos, all that fun swag, and our gay gratitude. Mm-hmm. So go over that. And remember to rate and review us on iTunes if you haven't yet. We got a particularly fun review from one of our listeners in the Midwest.
Oh, that I great. Just
would like to read.
I wonder which of my high school classmates this was.
I hope it was. So this person says, although I hilariously disagree with almost all of Carolyn's opinions, I am super into hearing them along with Sarah's and each guest take on the subject they discuss. The show is fun, full of banter and funny, and has gotten me through the end of my pregnancy, and that alone is a feat. Keep them coming, y'all. This queer from the Midwest appreciates you.
Interesting. How disagrees. Do you hilariously disagree with something?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess she just likes to be...
I think Lewis Black hilariously disagrees, but I don't know if anyone else... I don't know if anyone else can hilariously disagree. I love that line, though. That's good.
Yeah, when I read it, I was like, oh, man, I guess that's cool.
I think we're going to have to use pull quotes from our reviews on our first round of merch t-shirts.
Yeah.
And one says, hilariously disagree.
With almost, and in parentheses, almost all of Carolyn's
almost
opinions.
Almost all of Carolyn's opinions. I wonder which one this person like is kind of okay with.
Oh, probably that men are scum.
Oh, yeah, probably that. And probably that's... like your Buffy thing, which I just call your entire...
My
like,
Buffy thing.
Your decade-long fandom of Buffy, your Buffy thing.
Those are probably the two strongest opinions I have that most people
Men are trash and Buffy's the best.
And Alyssa's probably wondering, like, is Carolyn like alt-right or something like that? Is she like secretly?
She's like, what did I get tricked into?
I really didn't think my opinions were that controversial until we started this podcast, and then I get all these emails with pull quotes of what I said.
Yeah.
And I'm like, sorry, everybody.
At least you're getting mentioned. No one ever fully, like, no one's ever really completely on board with anything that I say. They're just like, yeah, she's fine. But here's what I had a problem with that Carolyn said.
I mean, you know,
I think I'm towing the line too much. I need to take like a harder stance one way or the other. I'm playing it safe here, and that's no way to get ahead in this world. Not in the golden age of podcasts.
Well, see, this is your chance. This is your chance to shine this right. episode. Just start spitting those opinions and stick by them.
Great.
I do think that one thing that I've learned since starting this podcast is how different, vastly different everybody's experiences are and their mm-hmm. perspectives within the LGBTQ community mm-hmm. and that mine apparently are not in line with most people. I mean, there, again, are the
we
universal...
We do get a lot of emails about your comments. Yeah.
there are universal truths, like most cis men are gross.
It just clicked men. To me, actually, who this commenter is, and she is lovely, and I really, really like her a lot, and I need to catch up with her. But anyway...
Oh, wait.
No, I've talked to her
really
recently. It just clicked, because I was like... The pregnancy thing narrowed it down to literally one person, and she's awesome.
I like that you know all of our Midwest listeners.
Well, yeah, there's probably 20 of them.
No, there's more.
Great.
We have a lot of listeners in the Midwest.
All right.
Yeah, your mom is really spreading the news.
My mom is our Midwest publicist, so.
I mean, it's like 90% New York.
I have to wonder if my mom actually says the name of the podcast, because sometimes straight ladies get like grossed out by saying the word dyking or dyke because they don't think they can say it.
Sure.
But yeah, maybe she just says
I like to think she whispers it.
Oh, yeah. Or she spells it out.
Yeah.
Go on your phone onto the podcast thing. It's DYKING out.
I'm going to give your mom some business cards from us so she can pass them out and then she doesn't have to say it. But you know, an important thing about having all these different perspectives and stories is that we need to get them out there through things like this podcast mm-hmm. and through things like movies based on your life experiences. And this is where I'm the segue master.
Wow, because, the queen of segues.
No
commenter can take that from you.
No. This person's like, I disagree. Yeah. Forced. Too forced. So some of our listeners may be familiar with Alyssa Robbins' music, which I would say has mega lesbian appeal.
Mm-hmm. Mega. Wow.
Mega.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe because
there's lesbian
to me.
Appeal, then there's mega lesbian appeal.
Well, I find that the lyrics from queer mm-hmm. singer-songwriters are just so much more relatable that... Yeah. Immediately, I find it more appealing because it's not like, oh, I miss his big arms or something.
His big hairy arms.
Yeah. His back hair, his ball sweat. I don't know.
I don't know what they're singing about these days. I don't know what the heteros are singing about. Ugh.
But there was also a movie that came out recently, right? Mm-hmm. And it's called Bex. And I highly recommend everybody go see it. You can rent or buy it on Amazon and probably iTunes, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. And it's based on your life, loosely.
Loosely,
so
yeah.
First, we want to know how loosely is it?
I mean, the movie, so the writer, one of the writers and directors, Liz, Elizabeth Roraba, who is amazing, It's really both of our stories.
Okay.
She saw me play a show in the Midwest, in St. Louis, actually, and I'm from the Midwest, so what up, MW?
Great.
But she saw this show, and it was such a weird, crazy night, and it was full of all these, like, drunken men in a 17-seat diner. I mean, I'd really randomly booked this show, and it was after a breakup, and I was kind of on the road just kind of figuring stuff out, and so she happened to see it, and there was, like, just a rowdy group of dudes, and even the bartender was like had a gun on his belt and like by the end of the show was crying, and so she just said like I really want to, this was very cinematic and I'm kind of inspired and I'm thinking about writing about you. And so it all kind of started from there, and we were both in the same place where, and we actually talked about this over coffee the next day, just saying like we're too old to be wandering and we're too young to be in a midlife crisis.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we were just in this very bizarre place. And because we had that connection in that moment in time, she just started kind of writing. And so while it was like the plot was kind of me, it was both of our experiences of just like, what the hell am I doing right now?
Cool.
Yeah. And so it kind of all came from there. And then before I knew it, there was a script and like Dan Powell was attached. She worked with Amy Schumer and he was directing and writing scenes. And then Rebecca Drysdale, who's like this amazing comedy writer, was in
Big
on
fans
it.
Of her.
Oh, and she was like the best scene in the movie, in my opinion. I think she's so funny.
Oh, that part was, I loved it. That was the most relatable part. So there's a scene in the movie where the title character Bex is at a party and then just immediately gets introduced to Rebecca Drysdale, who's a butch lesbian.
Literally the other lesbian that this person knows.
Yeah,
so it's like two lesbians person. Get together.
Yeah, and it's like, I'll leave you two alone now. And it's like, well, here we are. The two lesbians at the party.
Yeah.
And I think we've all experienced
that. Oh, absolutely.
But I was on set that day, and literally the crew had to like cover their mouths because she did every take differently. She was just hilarious to watch, and they were just trying not to make noise behind the camera, myself included. So
I think my favorite line was from that scene is that lesbian sounds like a Hogwarts house that nobody wants to be in.
That's great.
Yeah. And now it's in theaters and on demand. So
Great.
Yeah, it's crazy. It was a crazy experience.
Yeah. How long did that take for that to all come together?
So they were like showing me scripts and then they asked me to come in an audition for Bex. Didn't get the part.
Interesting.
Which I'm totally fine with. I mean, like Lena Hall is incredible in the role and it was one of those things where like I'm not an actor, right? Like I studied theater and like, you know, the beginnings of college. So it was just like, this is not something I could carry on my shoulders.
Yeah.
But the music component was always going to be part of it. So I started working with Steve Sillette like two summers ago. And we had never met, but we sat in a room for 2 weeks and kind of sculpted songs that already existed and then worked on new material. And then he really honed it all in and put up on the screen what you hear.
Yeah.
And he did an amazing job with Lena and the orchestrations and changing things and making them more cinematic. And I really like left that all to him before filming. They filmed it and then I got to start seeing it. And it was just like, whoa, we made this thing. And I had no experience with film before. And to the amount of people that like just their blood and sweat and tears that go into that. And it's such a short filming time, such little money. I mean, the crew was stellar. I think I've heard Liz say it a number of times. She just couldn't have asked for a better directing experience. I mean, everybody really showed up and were there with passion, you know, because we all weren't doing it for the money. That's for sure.
Yeah. That's great. Having a good crew is so important on a shoot because you're spending so much time together and it takes a lot of trust and there's a lot of different opinions on a set and a lot of different personalities. But you have like these really tight timelines to get all this stuff done. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy.
Yeah.
But it came together great.
It was great, except for every time that I got tongue-tied when Mina Suvari came around me. I was just like, I get
it. Oh, my God. That's what I was going to say,
I don't know what to talk to you about.
I didn't know if, like, the based on your life part was that, like, at one point you were banging Mina Suvari.
Yeah. No, she's not that cool. No, she was just so sweet, and she would always just, like, start conversation. And she actually asked me to teach her a lot of the guitar stuff because I was on set, and I could help her with that. But I just was like... I mean, I like was 18 when like American Beauty came out and like she was in American Pie and like those episodes of 6 Feet Under when she played a queer lady. And I was just like, I mean, she was like a big deal when I was, you know, right around that age when it was like so impressionable and like just starting to figure out these feelings. Right. So I just got super tongue tied and I still see her and she's always so sweet, so kind. And I just lose my ability to talk. I mean,
That's great.
Yeah.
Was her character based on a real person at all?
No, that was kind of a plot twist that was
good,
written.
Juicy plot device.
Love those.
And a way to rope in Mina Suvari.
No, in real life, script, I didn't get laid for a long time.
because I was going to say that's pretty cool if you were banging the wife of.
No, never happened.
Yeah, all right. Spoiler alert.
See Bex.
Maybe I should edit that out. Is that too much of a spoiler?
Oh, no. I don't think so. It's kind of in the trailer.
Right. Yeah. It's pretty obvious that that's going to happen. Though, when I watch it with my wife, she didn't see the trailer beforehand. Mm. So as soon as she saw a little bit of the kind of attraction between the two characters, she's like, oh, I know what's going to happen. I'm like, yeah.
Duh. You really?
It's not a...
solve that mystery.
Yeah.
bless her. On the way to Arizona, Battle of the Sexes.
Yeah.
Finally.
Oh, I thought you'd already seen that movie.
No.
Whoa, I totally thought you saw Battle
Speaking
of the Sexes.
Speaking of movies based on people's lives.
Yeah.
I loved it. I thought it was so good.
I really liked it. Yeah, I thought it was
I liked
so
it a
good.
Lot. It really bummed me out to read, because I didn't know all the story about what Billie actually Jean. Happened between yeah.
her
these
and Marilyn.
Women over the course of like that 7 or 8 years that they were like together and
she
off
like
and on.
She like sued her and stuff, right?
Yeah, and like yeah. kind of forced her to come out. So,
well, that was the thing. All the press around it when it came out was Billie Jean King and then them talking about her getting sued and all of that.
Yeah.
So I actually went into the movie thinking that was going to be part of it and that whole fallout of her losing the sponsors. I'm kind of glad it wasn't, because then it was like a nice inspirational
yeah.
movie that left people feeling yeah. good about it. But
I thought the actors were fantastic.
Yeah.
Steve yeah. Carell was great. I love Steve Carell. He's like one yeah. of my favorite male actors.
And Elizabeth Shue popping up.
Oh, yeah. She's still got it, by the
love
way.
Love her.
Yeah.
She's a babe.
Yeah. Adventures in Babysitting, early crush. Like,
I yeah. have never seen
Chris
that movie.
Parker.
What?
I know.
Oh.
Ugh. We could do a whole episode just based on movies I haven't seen and people going, what?
Yeah.
And that's all it is. It's just me listing movies I haven't seen. I've never seen Pretty Woman.
Oh, well.
I know. Well, not all the way through. I watched like the first half of it like a year ago.
That's one of those movies that I like loved when I saw it. Like, it was the number one movie of that year, I think, in yeah. 1990 or something like that. And then you go back as an adult, like with more education and like context,
right.
and you're like, this is really problematic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so much wrong with the situation.
Does not hold up.
No.
Definitely doesn't hold up.
But it does in some corner of my like childhood heart. You know,
right,
it's
right.
like I have to like... just forget all the things I learned in my life. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that movie is like a childhood favorite of so many people, because it's literally about like a hooker who falls in love with some guy, like one of her Johns, basically.
Yeah.
I yep. like it. And young Julia Roberts was hot. She still is.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think she's changed much. And she doesn't seem like she's aged. At least I haven't seen a picture of her too recently.
I think she's reverse aging, or she's just like...
But she doesn't look weird plastic surgery.
No, not at all.
Not a Nicole Kidman situation.
No,
she's
no.
like...
Woo, Nicole Kidman has aged into a squirrel.
Yeah.
She is just like... She just
she
looks like a little squirrel.
All edges and corners and elbows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. This is the part of the show where we talk shit on beautiful actresses.
Beautiful actresses at the Oscars.
We've got to stop letting like male late night hosts
Man,
the Oscars.
I do not like Jimmy Kimmel. I
don't. I'm not wild. I rank him just below. Of the men in late night, I like Seth Meyers the most.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kimmel to me, I don't know. I do like some of his, I like how he's leaned a little heavier into the social commentary than like, yeah. any of the other ones, basically.
I like how far he's come from
My
the man
God.
He used to be.
Yeah, and also, like, we still
I appreciate that.
Yeah, talk about a career arc that did not go the way that the other host of The Man Show, Adam Carolla, kind of leaned into that
yeah.
really shitty dude
yeah.
thing and is still doing that. Whereas
yeah.
I think if it was Jimmy Kimmel or people who get paid a lot of money to advance the career of Jimmy Kimmel, had to have told him at some point, like, this is not, this won't last. Like,
yeah.
this being funny and cool won't last. So
yeah.
you need to become more of a person than
yeah.
a caricature of like a frat boy Adam Sandler kind of like mashup sort of thing. So
yeah.
I don't know. He's all right. But I think we need to get into, has a woman ever hosted the Oscars?
Ellen DeGeneres.
Ellen, oh yeah. Didn't she? She hosted the one after 9/11, right?
No, she hosted the
she hosted
Emmys.
Something. Emmys.
Emmys
okay.
after 9/11. She did the Oscars maybe like 5 2000s. Years ago.
I thought it was like 2008.
Is she the only woman to ever host it?
No, Whoopi
no,
Goldberg.
Whoopi.
Oh,
yeah.
okay. Great.
Yeah.
So two women in 90 years.
Nailed it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought Whoopi did a great job with it. I really like Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah, me too.
Remember when she used to date Ted Danson?
Oh my God. Remember
oh my
when
God.
He did blackface?
When he did blackface.
What?
Yeah. He did blackface while they were dating.
Wow.
As like what a bad
white men cannot handle relationships with black women very well. Like, they never, ever quite nail it.
Well, and to be fair, like, what's Whoopi thinking? Like, why is this okay? Like, why'd you let him out of the house?
Yeah, like,
she defended it.
Was that a discussion at some point? And she's like, hey,
Ted,
that.
Can I talk to you for a second?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, first of all, you're great. Like, you sit him down.
You have
like
to compliment first.
Like a job. Before, yeah, the shit sandwich for sure.
I could see it's something like if they were really high one night and... Or like, oh, this would be the most ridiculous thing. What if he did this?
Yeah, you people do have to factor nuts. In the, like,
and then he goes through with it.
Tons of weed that Whoopi Goldberg has smoked over the years.
And still smokes. She has a line for menstrual cramps.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so she's a CBD, like, Whoopi Goldberg line of marijuana that is specifically for women's reproductive issues.
Oh, fantastic.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I gotta look into that for sure.
Yeah. Oh, Cynthia Nixon might be running for governor, and if she does, I hope she's better about legalizing marijuana than Cuomo.
Yeah, she can be better at a lot of things. Yeah. Is that like a serious thing that she's running? I saw that on Twitter, and I wasn't sure if like
it's she's if that was a stunt she's exploring or, it. No, okay, she's definitely exploring it.
Yeah,
and she's tight with Bill de Blasio, and he's been supportive of it. And she would be like a more progressive candidate.
Probably.
I'm for it.
Yeah. I'm for anything at this point. Any women in charge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want the all-female reboot of Congress right now. Like, that has to happen.
Please.
Or mostly female.
Yeah. Except for Michelle Bachmann.
Except for Stacey Dash, who is also threatening to run for California.
What? Yeah, she filed.
She filed to run in her district in California,
which includes Compton.
Yeah, her only like platform so far is that she actually lives in the district, which apparently a lot of people don't live in the districts that they run for. I thought you had to, but I guess if you just own property in the district, you can technically run for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's the worst. But I seriously doubt she'll gain any sort of traction.
No.
But you never know. So
I think
she'll be able to gain the funding for it. She's running as a Republican, obviously.
Yeah. And she's going to sell books.
Yeah. Yeah. That's her thing.
What book did she write?
There Goes My Social Life.
Oh,
that's
Stacey
Dash's book.
No, she's just terrible.
That's
she was a quote.
Yeah.
She was on
she's
Fox
just
News
playing
for a while.
That movie out.
Yeah.
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 Wow.
In every sense.
God, that is a great movie, though.
Brittany Murphy, R.I.P.
I know. I love her.
Yeah.
Did we just have a moment of silence impromptu for Brittany
Murphy? Yeah, I think we did.
Great.
That's the gayest thing we've ever done on this podcast. I don't know why, but I always like thought of Brittany Murphy as like this kind of queer icon. But for no reason whatsoever.
She was in Girl Interrupted.
Yeah, but was she? Her character wasn't queer at all, was she? I don't think so. Her character collected chicken bones under her bed.
Yeah.
And then
killed herself.
Yeah,
killed herself.
Her character had like the saddest arc of that whole thing, but she kind of nailed that part. And then she made a delightfully, like a really plucky movie called Uptown Girls with Dakota Fanning.
Yes.
When Dakota Fanning was like a little kid.
Yeah.
And I liked that movie, even though it was like kind of a silly, I don't know if it would hold up. I watched it 10 years ago and I liked it. It might be another one that
so
I watch now,
a movie
and it's like,
you've seen.
I
was thinking
I
the same
seen
thing.
Pretty Woman, but I've seen Brittany Murphy and Dakota Fanning and Uptown Girls
Dakota
multiple
Fanning
times.
Anthology. Yeah.
I'm familiar with her canon, but not with like all 90s films.
Yeah, all 90s films.
I've
all
also never seen
LGBT.
any of the like iconic Dicon movies.
Yeah.
I've never seen, but I'm a cheerleader. I've never seen. I have seen Imagine Me and You.
Okay.
I watched Imagine Me and You with this girl that I had like weird sexual tension with, and I couldn't focus on the movie because I was just focused on the weird sexual tension, which is what you do when you're in your early 20s and you're gay.
Yeah.
And I've never seen, I still haven't seen Carol, which I need to see.
Did you see High Art?
No.
Oof.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything. I haven't seen, what's
Carol's
the one
on
that,
Netflix.
I know. And I have the book version of it. Like, my friends are trying to get me to be into this, and I just can't do it. I don't know why. I'm worried that someone's going to die in the end. That's how I go into lesbian films. I'm like, this is going to end horrifically. I know it is.
It's a gay tragedy.
Because that's what they do to us.
Yeah.
That's mostly on TV. They kill off all the gays.
Yeah, because they run out of like things to write for them.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, Arizona is leaving Grey's Anatomy. We're all over the place.
Yeah.
We're going to get to the topic
soon.
We're
going to rein it in at some point.
Yeah. No, Arizona is such a great lesbian character. And then also later is a disabled lesbian character, yes, which is important for representation. And,
yeah.
You know, I couldn't stick with all like 37 seasons of Grey's Anatomy. Oh, so I left 30 seasons ago,
yeah,
when she was still, you know, I stuck with her after she lost a leg,
mm-hmm,
and was with that for like a couple seasons.
Yeah.
And then they just kept renewing it.
And then she lost the other leg. And then it's like, come on, writers. Yeah. Stop slowly dismembering our gay characters.
Is that what happens? Is that how they're writing her off the show?
You can be out, but you can't have legs. Sorry.
Like, yeah, here's the deal. We can't have you with all your appendages. Like, the something's got to give here.
Yeah. Oh, my
gosh.
You
can't be hot, successful, gay, and have your legs.
Well, I hope they give her a happy ending. So our topic today is...
Segue.
Our topic today is sex education because, Alyssa, your day job is teaching sex ed at a middle school?
7th, 8th, and 10th grade.
7th, 8th, and 10th grade.
Yeah.
Skipping 9th, huh?
Yeah.
They have enough.
It's a brand new program for the school, and so they just, I don't know what made them arbitrarily choose.
Okay.
I think the goal is to expand it, but for now, this is what we got.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's, yeah, give them 2 years of sex ed and then see how they do for
give
a year
a
in the wild.
Cool year. Let them make decisions with the information. Then we come back together and talk about what's happening.
Right.
So what's your experience like with that?
Yeah. Well, it's funny, the like just in the conversation we're having now in terms of like representation, I see like the kids who are a little like, you know, like maybe not gay, but definitely like queer or like experimenting, yeah, with gender, stuff like that. There's so much that they have access to that I think my generation just didn't have, mm-hmm, right?
Yes.
Especially the internet. I mean, I don't know anything about Tumblr, but from what I hear, like that is like where you go to find out who you are. And they can just like have conversations with people all around the world and kind of find their identity. And it's really amazing to see that. And I certainly can't even keep up with the amount of identities that exist.
Yeah.
But they are able to explore and kind of, mm-hmm, be on the spectrum that did not, that just wasn't around when I was growing up gay and closeted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking it must be so different to be teaching today's youth compared to what sex education was like back when we were growing up.
Oh, and, I didn't have it. I mean, yeah.
I had one, I think it was in 8th grade, we had one like semester that was required. They just called it health, was the title of the class, like health class, your, yeah, health credit. You just needed one. And the whole class was essentially a sex ed class, but it was an abstinence only. I distinctly remember the teacher, her entire curriculum was based around the concept of abstinence only. And, mm-hmm, it was just her basically talking up sex in a way that could only be like enjoyed or experienced in a marriage. So, and I went to a public school, but this was also like back in, when was I in 8th grade? 99, mm-hmm, 98 or 99. So I don't know. I imagine it's, I hope it's changed. Is this a public school that
it's
you?
It's a private school.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, that abstinence only, I mean, that's the only kind of funding you could get government wise for many, many years until Obama took over from, you know, and said like, we need to open this up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because in the context of, if you're only teaching that, there's so much information lost.
Yeah.
And, it's also just so heteronormative. I mean, yeah, like for a long time, if you talk about sex is only in the context of marriage, then all the gay kids are like, well, I'm out. Like, I don't, yeah, I'm not going to listen to this. This has nothing to do with me. Right.
Yeah.
But you even can't, if a kid asks a question and it doesn't fall under the auspice of like what you're supposed to be teaching in abstinence only, you can't even answer the question.
Wow.
So abstinence is absolutely a component of what I teach. Uh-huh. I do not believe 7th graders are ready to be engaging in any sexual contact
right,
other than like,
right,
maybe a quick smooch or, yeah, you know, hug. But I do believe that the information, the more information they have, we know statistically that they delay sexual contact. And if then when they do engage, they protect themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Those are just hard, cold facts. So,
yeah,
I think I've even gotten some pushback from parents saying like, how can you tell a 7th grader that this is not for them, that they cannot do it? And I was like, because when we say no to them, what's the first thing they want to do is go and do it.
Yeah.
Whereas if we say, like, if you can check all these boxes, if you can have a communication, an open communication with your partner, if you feel comfortable, if you can protect yourself, if you can, you know, feel safe and loved and comforted in this relationship, then yes, maybe you are ready to engage in sexual contact. But I don't know any seventh graders who can check all those boxes.
No.
Yeah. I don't even know many 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds. And on average, Americans we know, first, and this is very heteronormative, we mm-hmm. think of penis to vagina sex, basically for pregnancy tracking, but that first sexual contact tends to happen around 17 years of age. And, you know, I don't know that many of those first encounters are the most comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the hope is delay, delay, delay until you are in a great, emotionally stable place. And that's the goal of the program.
The abstinence only education thing is coming back uh-huh. with the new administration. I was reading this week that that's going to be in vogue again.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's coming back for sure.
Yeah.
I think Mike Pence and his wife, Mother, have worked really hard on creating the curriculum for that and implementing that again.
Yeah. And like you said, it goes against everything that all the facts.
Yeah. We just know. Statistically, it doesn't work. Doesn't work. And, gives false information. I mean, you know, I think it was a while ago, like 10 years ago, but it said stuff like condoms fail 50% of the time was being taught, that all gay kids have AIDS, mm-hmm. that, you know, just like really abhorrent, like misinformation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just, why would you want that for your kid? I mean, you know, you want to have these conversations and make sure they're being safe, right? And you can't monitor what they're doing all the time. So if we can give them the information, we know that that helps them delay. We know that it helps them make better decisions. To me, it's just a no-brainer. I obviously have some opinion on it. Mm-hmm. Some personal investment, but
yeah. How much is the curriculum still geared towards just heterosexual, like, activities, that kind of thing?
In my classroom, it's not at all.
Okay, cool.
It's, you know, it's something that most sex educators that I know who are out there teaching and don't have the restrictions that most teachers actually do have. I mean, if a English teacher or a gym teacher is being saddled with this, I don't expect them to be an expert, right? I mean, they're being put in a position where they're teaching things that, like, they didn't sign up to teach, right? And answer questions that they might not be comfortable with.
That was my experience in public school. The woman that taught the class was a PE teacher, mm-hmm. And she... Mm-hmm. She was kind of one of those, like, I don't know. Looking back, I think I would love to have a conversation with her now about how that was. But she basically, she was really the kind of shaming people who don't wait until marriage.
Yeah.
I think her experience was that she did, or she probably didn't, but she told us that she did and reiterated that over and over again. And it was very much like putting the onus on the female students to, like, you know, remain pure and all that kind of stuff. It was like oddly, she never invoked religion at all. I don't remember, but it was kind of along those tracks. So this is a woman who, you know, was teaching middle school PE that probably wasn't qualified at all to be teaching this, but she was like the only female teacher in that department. So I think that's why they wanted her in there. Mm-hmm. I imagine they'd try to get women to be the teachers in that situation. I don't know. Do you work with any men that teach sex ed or?
I did. They're few and far between. There's not a lot of men in this field. And you know, I don't really know why that is. I think they would be so integral into this work as well. You know, just across the board, we need more people doing it and we need more funding to do it. But like the teachers that are saddled with doing it, they do put a lot of their own like idea and value into what they say because it's their story and that's what they know, right? Mm-hmm. For me, I mean, it's taken years of training to, and still like I'm learning things of how to say things more correctly. Like I just learned at a training, the Transgender Training Institute had something in the fall and they were like, start calling female and male condoms external and internal condoms because not everybody who's male identified uses external condoms and not everybody who's female identified uses internal condoms. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about anatomy, make it clear that you're saying this is, you know, sex-wise, if we're talking about hormones and anatomy and all of that, this is the female reproductive system, but not everybody who has this system identifies as female, right?
Yes.
And to make that clear distinction for the kids, they go, oh, yeah, right? And we start to see there's a separation between sex and gender, and then we can talk about why gender is different than sex, right? That gender is about your identity, who you are. It's between your ears, and sex is your junk. It's your anatomy. It's your chromosomes.
Yeah.
But I'm still learning, and I can't imagine an English teacher who's like, hey, you have 2 weeks to talk about puberty with kids.
And they just hand them a binder of like, here's all the material that the state, you know, or so-and-so requires or whatever, just teach it. And that's like, that's probably one of those areas that is like, God, it's so crucial to get the right, to get the right message across to kids. But it's the one that like is prioritized last in a lot of things. Like, we're, you know, we're spending years teaching kids like geometry and trigonometry, but like how their bodies work or what consent is or, you know, things like that. It just, it falls by the wayside because it's just this little piddly requirement that at least, I mean, at least when I was in school, that's how it felt. It was like, they're drudging through this because they have to teach us this, this, and this and check the points and send us on.
Yeah. Well, we were a lot of people, 13. A lot of people believe that that shouldn't be coming from school anyway, that that conversation should be coming from parents. But if you look at how many parents actually want even have the right information, you know, and sit down and talk to their kids about it, it's never, you know, they might have a birds and the bees talk at some point, but it's never or rarely a comprehensive education. And that's why it should be part and mandatory for people to go through. I remember when we had sex ed in my school, you could get an exemption if your parents didn't want you taking it. But ours was more progressive, not to the point of talking about the difference between gender and sex, because back then that wasn't a thing that anybody talked about. But one thing that they had, and I don't know if you do this, is there was a bucket that we could put questions in.
Question box.
The question box, anonymous. And some of them were jokes. Some of them were, let's write these things because the teacher has to read them. And let's see if we can make her uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And
some things never change. I had to answer tomorrow, is semen healthy to eat?
Oh, my God.
That's one of the questions I got from a seventh grader.
What are you going to say?
Barring any infection, it's not going to hurt you. But then I also, you know, then the conversation comes up of like, you know, engaging in oral sex. Like, you can make the choice. You do not have to swallow. You can ask your partner to tell you. But yeah, I mean, they want to see me say penis. And I also get questions like, who would win in a fight, like Batman or whoever.
I mean, they are still kids.
I remember a couple of the ones that my teacher got. One was, what's a shocker?
Really?
Yeah.
Because they just wanted the teacher to say shocker.
Oh, no. She's like, two in the pink, one in the stink.
Oh, my God.
And it was
That complicates it further. I feel like, pink? Stink. Yeah. Like, what are you talking about?
I think we had some sort of question box too, and it was mostly just little drawings of penises that the boys would put in and giggle.
I remember, because even though I didn't at that point realize that I was a lesbian, but definitely was interested in anything that had to do with LGBTQ topics.
Why am I so drawn to this?
Why is this so? Why am I hanging on every word of this? One person in my class, the only queer content I remembered was because somebody in my class asked a question, I think my best friend is gay, what do I do? And the funny thing is,
Was it your best friend that asked that?
No, right? That'd be funny. No, it was my friend who was sitting in front of me, and I know he wrote it thinking about my next door neighbor.
Okay.
Who was a guy that I always thought might be gay. And so it was like, it was kind of like an awkward moment, because I'm like, oh man, like Cal is struggling with wanting to confront this. And the teacher was like, I don't know, it doesn't really matter if he's gay or not, but if you're his friend and you want to talk to him about it, you can do that. All right.
That's actually a great answer.
It's actually, I mean, a pretty good answer given the context of the time.
No, I mean, I was pretty impressed with our sex ed teacher. She was a gym teacher and a volleyball coach who was teaching sex ed.
Yeah.
She wasn't queer, but at least not at the time.
Yeah.
Though, like, she could have.
I was going to say, the character bits are already pretty laid out for her to be a gay, like, PE teacher, volleyball coach.
But she talked about her boyfriend a lot, but that could have been code. You never know.
Could have been,
So, do your students know
that I'm gay?
They,
to me, I'm always like, of course, like, how is it not obvious? But I think that they're just not even thinking about it.
Yeah.
I think it like a couple kids have
the
asked
gay
me.
Gay ones are thinking about it.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a couple kids in the class that are just dying to know.
Yeah. I think they're a little more shy about asking, especially because I, from the get, I said the question box, I will not answer any personal questions.
Yeah.
So that was immediately off limits. But yes. I said little things like they've asked me about my necklace, which is for my girlfriend. And so I'll say that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think they were like, yeah, I think they've mm-hmm. finally got their answer. But yeah. I don't bring it up unless they, you know, really have like an important question. And I feel like I like to be out and I like to be visible to them. But I also, it's a fine line of like how much personal information do I give?
Yeah.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
But yeah, I mean, I'm just, with the movie, I mean, so the school found out about the movie and were very supportive.
Mm-hmm.
And they wrote about it in the parents' newsletter. So I've had many students come up to me like, did you have a movie made about you? And so they've found like my music videos and... Yeah, I mean, it all seems pretty gay to me. So,
yeah,
pretty like
kids love digging into the personal lives of their teachers.
I know it's really dangerous.
I was always fascinated by teachers, and I wanted to know more about them and more about their lives.
We just didn't have the tools back then. I mean, I can't hide stuff. I mean,
no, there's no way
they find it because they're smarter than me.
They know your first and last name. Technology. They can find it.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's been dangerous sometimes where I'm like, you saw that? Like, I got to take that down. Like, how do I get that off there?
Yeah.
But, you know, once it's out, like, that's one of the things I teach about technology safety is, like, it's really out there once it's out there. It's hard to bring stuff back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that a pretty big component of sex ed now?
Technology?
Yeah.
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 One of the big, so an article came out in the New York Times, and I just had parent-teacher conferences, and a lot of them had questions about it because internet porn, you know, mm-hmm. porn was really hard to get when I was growing up. And now it's everywhere. And mm-hmm. so there's actually porn literacy classes that are starting to exist. And like, how do you dive through and actually look at something with a sophisticated eye, right? So you can look at porn and it's common, right? I think the last statistic I read is like 90% of Americans have admitted to it once in their life watching porn.
Not Mike
and
Pence.
The other 10% are liars.
The other 10% are Mike Pence and mother.
Yeah. Mike Pence and mother have definitely watched something.
And also, like, what is porn? Like, Game of Thrones can get pretty porny, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of sexual content that they can draw from. And so what we are trying to say over and over again is, you know, really overall, these things are, they don't illustrate the healthy relationships we're striving for you to understand and to achieve. They're violent. Mm-hmm. They're specifically violent towards women.
Mm-hmm.
They're degrading. So like driving that point home over and over again, but also in like a way, like normalizing the curiosity, but also then saying it's illegal for you to be looking at this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason why there's age limits. You know, we talk about drugs and alcohol, like you are not developmentally ready for this. I understand the curiosity. Your brains are just geared for that right now. Mm-hmm. You are looking to take risks. Like, that's part of your process, but you have to know what these risks are and say, is it worth it for me to do this? Again, just giving them as much knowledge as possible and hoping they make the best decision.
For sure.
And they're not going to all the time because they're kids. And how much stupid shit did you do when you were a kid? Right. I mean, there's things where I was like, how did you stay alive? Like, what were you doing?
Yeah.
And hopefully you come out unscathed.
That's something I haven't thought too much about in terms of what would be the sex education role and having to integrate that into the curriculum. But this education about what is porn and kind of what's the, I mean, people, people can be like, oh yeah, we know what porn is. But to explain to people now that it's like so freely and readily available and that kids can see it so much more easily and that it, there are so many categories and genres and and stuff to explain to them the things that you said that, you know, this isn't like a healthy sexual relationship that you're watching transpire.
Right.
Like, this is something just to nut off to or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not your your learning manual for, for how to have sex because then you're going to have some very disappointed partners and people who feel very,
I mean, in conversations with all my straight women friends, that's kind of the repeated, that's like the one kind of through line of all those conversations is that the really disappointing sex that they have had with men is because men watch porn and think that,
and they copy that.
Yeah. And they kind of think that like jackhammering is going to make a woman get off. And that's like, that is literally the most common thing I've heard from everyone's like, oh yeah, well men watch so much porn that they're all terrible in bed.
Well, that aggressor role, and like you talked about, like, you know, that that concept of like women having to beat men back, and because it's their role to aggress and you know, crave and like be this animalistic like idea of sex, whereas women are just supposed to be pure and demure, and then you know eventually cave in some way, you know, and that really fucks up our idea of consent as well.
Yeah,
and I the sophomore that I it was such a moment that I was kind of drawn back, and I didn't really quite know how to answer it. And we were watching The Hunting Ground, which talks about sexual assault on college campuses. And, you know, it's like, you know, like the majority of women are saying in some way they've either been in a situation where they felt threatened or like, you know, the statistics show that there's a high rate of sexual assault on college campuses. And this kid said, like, I don't believe that, you know, this number of men are looking to go sexually assault. And I said, well, that's interesting that you say that. If they're not actively looking, then what's happening? What's the breakdown in communication, right?
Yeah.
So whatever that area is where we're seeing these assaults being reported and you're saying that men aren't actively looking to assault, like where's the breakdown there? Because clearly we don't have a clear concept of what's appropriate behavior and what's not, right?
Yeah.
How you engage in sexual encounters and how you don't, right? If you're drunk, that is not consent, right? If you are, both of you, if either of you are
passed out, that's not consent.
It's not consent, right? So we need to be much clearer about those roles and break down that bullshit toxic masculinity of like, I crave sex and it's your job to push me back.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Gross. Like, no, that's not how these relationships are supposed to go down.
Yeah. And coercion is not consent. And like wearing someone down to the point of just agreeing finally to see you leave them alone is not healthy either. That's, I'm curious as to what younger people are learning now as far as like younger boys and men rather about what, like picking up on like social cues, like trying to understand, trying to like detect discomfort in women and girls and like how that works. Because I don't think, obviously, that has not been taught up until very recently to anyone.
An interesting thing, though, again, this is just based on my experience when I was in high school and my friends were having their first serious relationships of guys that they might have sex with. And they would talk to me a lot about these conversations that they had with their boyfriends at the time around sex. And I found, I mean, I was surprised at how many of these guys, and these were, you know, from different groups in the school. So there were some that were like the popular football player to some that were more quiet and shy, but that none of them were that aggressive about wanting sex or, you know, they were very cautious. They were worried about getting pregnant or they were worried about hurting their girlfriends by penetrating them. And like somewhere between that And then, like, when they go off to college or maybe some point later, I don't know. But, like, where that
I'm sure a lot of that has to do with changes. The socialization with other boys around them, you know, like.
But you would think that high school boys are all like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get laid and blah, blah. But, like, I don't think that that's necessarily the case. And it's like, how do you preserve that beyond maybe, you know, maybe that's how they feel the first time they have sex. And then once they've had sex once, then all that kind of disperses and they're like, I need to do this as much as possible. Yeah.
I think that first taste of freedom can be really confusing. And I also think when you fuel it with alcohol, which you're probably doing much more often because you're not going home to your parents' house. You know, I think that makes, I mean, I'm in my 30s and I still make really poor decisions when I'm drunk.
Sure, for sure.
Young boys, I mean, I think that they're still so developmentally figuring things out too. And I think, you know, that 15, 16-year-old who's concerned about hurting somebody, and I think that's such a great position. And then, yeah, what is that thing that happens in college? I don't know. It's scary. And the consent thing, I mean, I think for me it's so clear, and for some reason it's so unclear. It's like, do I have to keep asking? Why do I have to keep asking?
Yeah.
Well, like, how do I ask, right? And I keep saying, like, the one, I mean, if you can't talk about it, you shouldn't be doing it, right?
Yeah.
If you can't have these conversations with your partner, then don't do it.
Yeah.
Because you're not ready, clearly. You can't even say the word penis. You know, like, you need to be able to have these conversations with your partner.
Yeah. I mean, I remember my first lesbian relationship that I really wanted to perform oral sex on my girlfriend, but I didn't know how to go about it. And I'm like, do I just bring it up? Do I just do it? But I felt wrong just going for it.
Right, right.
And then I was like, oh my gosh, if I can't even talk to her about this, maybe we're not ready.
Yeah, no, that's exactly for this yet.
Yeah. But I think that's a good measure of like how comfortable are you talking about it. And if you're not, then you're probably not ready to do it.
Yeah.
But how I did go do down you... on her during the Super Bowl.
Right. Anyway.
You what?
We were watching the Super Bowl and then, like, you know, it was kind of boring. So then I was like, now's the time.
That's the great. Moment is right.
I will literally never forget that you said that every year at the Super Bowl. What a weird thing now that I have in my brain.
Yep. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Yeah.
How much do you guys teach about, like, defining what sex is, and do you incorporate, like, same-sex encounters into that? Okay.
Yeah. And it's just me. So the program is, again, looking to expand, but it's just me in the school right now. And I obviously, like, have people that check in on me and make sure I'm doing everything that I should be. But, yeah, we talk about so the question is always, like, when should we start having sex? Like, what's the right age? Like, and, of course, I just say, you know, it's different for everybody, right? So you have different levels of comfortability at different ages. But we talk about sex in terms of risk, right? So if you let somebody stick their tongue in your ear and you feel like that was sex, then that's sex to you, right? A lot of people will define oral sex as not sex or anal sex as not sex, right? I'm not going to tell you how to define things, but is there risk associated with those things? Yes. So we don't, I'm not going to tell you, like, if you've had anal sex and you consider yourself still to be a virgin, fine, right? Did you put yourself at risk for something? Yes. So always in terms of, like, what are you doing where you might, your body and health might be compromised. And that to me is orientationless. It's genderless, right? If we're talking about skin-to-skin contact, if we're talking about a penis going into the anus, like, that is risk. So that's kind of how we talk about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Man, I wish I had had, I really, like, I'm very happy to have grown up, I guess, in the time that I did, mostly because I think it's, like, now that I'm kind of in my, like, I'm in my early 30s, and I think this is a good time and blah, blah, blah. And thank God I wasn't born in, like, the 60s or any time before that. But I really think that we were, like, just on the cusp of getting so much better educated, and we missed it. Like, I really, really wish that someone had been honest in, like, our sex education and not just sat there and preached about abstinence for a semester. I just think, I think we're missing out so much on that kind of thing. And I think that might be part of the problem with, you know, with, especially with the consent thing now, because that doesn't go away after college. Like, obviously that's still very much an issue amongst women and men in their, like, 30s and beyond. I feel like, I don't know why they don't have a mandatory curriculum in colleges about continuing sex education. Like, that to me is when it's really, really needed. Obviously high school, but then, like, beyond that, I would, I mean, oh, you have to do an online thing? Our intern Karina is in college. What would you, yeah, but like an online, I don't know. Like,
was it like, part of your student orientation?
It wasn't a sex ed thing, it was just about assault.
Oh, okay.
It was just about assault and consent. Consent. Which is important.
That just needs, that needs to be just constantly taught. Like, I really think that is just an ongoing thing that should be addressed at every phase in the academic process in college. But I don't know, I have no idea what, because we certainly did not have that in the colleges I went to either.
No, and every time I watch a movie or a TV show from the 90s and early 2000s, mm-hmm. the way that consent is portrayed, or like the absence of consent in a lot of relationships, mm-hmm. and how it's just seen as normal for men to be super skeezy in the way that they try to sleep with women and do it while they're either drunk or trick them into sex, and then the women are always fine with it. It's so...
Or just just wearing them down. Like, that's what... I mean,
it's
if you
like
look
a lot
at all
of
the movies,
deprogramming.
Like, the whole... Yeah, like the unlearning process of every rom-com, all that shit that where the premise is... Woman resists man because he's, you know, he doesn't have his life together, he's immature or whatever. And he just like keeps trying and trying and trying. And eventually she gives in and realizes how great he is.
Yeah.
That's a big part of it too. It's like there's no reaction to her initial no. And obviously it's a screenplay device to have like that conflict, but it's really tired. And I think that's a huge part of why women are like programmed to. Men and women are programmed to. Women are programmed to, like, okay, you know, expect this like Prince Charming behavior, but settle for, like, women are programmed to settle, whereas men are programmed to just keep going until there's a yes, mm-hmm. or just not a no.
Yeah.
And I think that obviously has an effect on sexual dynamic as well.
One of the things that I just talked about with a coworker of mine is that idea that like women are supposed to teach men how to be better men.
Yeah.
Yep. And, fuck you. Like, learn it on your
Why
own.
Why is that
like,
a responsibility?
Yeah. Figure it out. And they're like, oh, I never thought about it that way. Like that kind of thing where you're like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
Like, do you know women? Do you, I mean,
you
I'm sick of it. Like,
them?
I have a daughter, I have a sister, I have all that. Like, do you know any other women? Like, you have to know that these issues are part of our lives. And, you know, just.
And men thinking of women in terms of their proxy to them. Like,
yeah.
The guys who were like, well, I, you know, I could never, the guys who denounce, you know, sexual assault because they have a daughter or they have a sister, like, you know, would you let your daughters do this? Like, why can't you just believe women when they tell you these things are happening?
Yeah.
And
'cause women are humans.
Right. And like, understand that we all have like agency and autonomy, regardless of our relationship to a man or multiple men.
Yeah. The parents at my school are lovely, and they were saying about their son, like, oh, he has sisters, he's really comfortable going to get them, like, you know, stuff for their period. And I just thought, like, what's the big
give him
fucking
a trophy.
Deal?
Right.
Yeah, like, who cares?
Put him on a pedestal.
Yeah. My dad went and got stuff for me. Like, that's just what you do. And like, it's ridiculous to me that like, oh. He's a really good guy. He'll go buy you menstrual products.
The standards for what's a good guy. Like, that's the other thing, too.
And actually, Sarah wrote a whole sketch about that called Brotex, was it?
Oh, yeah, Brotex. Yeah, it was about, feel free to look it up on YouTube.
Yeah, we did it as part of The Box, the show we write for.
Yeah.
New show coming up March 20th.
We're the worst.
Okay.
But that was the premise was that, like, wow, this guy is such a fucking hero for going out and buying tampons and not trying to disguise them or whatever. That's the other thing, too, is like our literal, like the way we're teaching kids about like how our bodies work and how specifically the issue of menstruation. Mm-hmm. Because I remember the only thing I remember ever learning about menstruation in a school setting was in sixth grade when they separate the boys and the girls.
Yep.
Yes.
The boys go in one room, the girls go in the other. We watch these dumb, archaic videos that all the kids giggle about because they're so stupid. And the teachers just play them, and then there's no discussion afterwards.
But I think it's a big problem that they separate them out because it's like, you know, then only...
Is that still happening?
It is happening in schools.
Then only the girls learn about menstruation,
and
then
boys
only
don't
boys
learn about...
Do they teach they boys about boners?
I think the boys learned about hygiene, and at least the... Because they came back talking about, like, deodorant and, like, Some other, you know, basically just kids are gross was like the lesson there. And like, here's how to smell better. But
yeah,
they did not know anything. And they were kind of like curious about what we learned, but like grossed out by it. So that's another thing too, is like this thing that we do every month forever is looked at as this really unapproachable, this like disgusting thing that nobody wants to talk about. Ugh, I don't want to talk about that. Like that needs to be addressed too, because it just feeds into that whole thing that women's bodies are something that can't be talked about in like a technical way, or even worse, need to be governed by men. So,
or just that the concept of feminine hygiene products, it's like, it's nothing to do with hygiene. In fact, this is one of the most hygienic things our body does.
Yeah.
So changing even the phrasing around that, like was something I learned years ago, but like, again, that gym teacher who's like got 2 weeks to be like, okay, the period.
Yeah.
You know, you once a month an egg drops. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, I think the girls are equally as fascinated when we talk about the, you know, reproductive system and like how does sperm get produced and what is a wet dream? Like when they've heard these phrases, they just don't really know what these things are. Mm-hmm. And I've asked, I've been asked, do you want to separate them out? And first of all, our school is really good about like, don't line them up, boys and girls. Don't, you know, we're really like free with the gender thing. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of gender nonconforming kids. We have some openly transgendered kids. And so that's just not something we do there. There's so much merit to them both learning about this system and how does it work. And then, you know, even the 10th grade boys that I just taught, they were fascinated by childbirth.
Yeah.
They couldn't. Like, I mean, I'm fascinated by it. I have no idea how our bodies do these things. And I hope to God to never squeeze a child out of my vagina. I have some choice in that. So I will not be doing that. But it is fascinating. And they were just like, oh, my God. And like watching a live birth. I mean, they were just like, holy Lord, that's insane that your bodies can do that. And it is. I mean,
I saw the video of my sister's C-section and I was freaking out about it more than her or her husband.
Yeah.
And I'm like, the body, this is insane.
It's a marvel.
It's crazy that they just cut you open and then they take this big baby out and like it's covered and this, that's been inside. What?
Like, I know. You just gave birth to a really human cool to learn about. Being.
Yeah.
You grew like a human.
We make humans. Yeah. It's wild.
Yeah.
And if you could, I think that, and then that just kind of like reinforces for me the idea that kids' default setting is like curious and open-minded. That's how kids are.
Sure.
That's their blank slate.
Yeah.
And if you can take advantage of that early and hopefully destigmatize things like periods, having babies, you know, and just teach them like that they want all that information and they are fascinated by that sort of thing. And to treat them like they can't learn about that kind of thing or to shield them from that information is such a disservice.
Or that to say that it shouldn't be coming from school. So you mentioned that you went to some sort of conference for trans.
Yeah, Transgender Training Institute has stuff all the time. And Ackerman is also one that hosts events.
So you're regularly training and learning and getting the latest information. Mm-hmm.
I got to go up to Mohonk to do a gender and sexuality conference, which.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, Mohonk was like.
The Mohonk, the big place.
It's like The Shining up there.
Yeah, I mean, amazing. I went to New Paltz and I looked into staying there and it was very expensive.
So expensive.
But it's beautiful up there and it does look like The Shining.
Yeah.
It's kind of scary.
It's, I mean, my work obviously paid for it, but I just like turned to my colleagues and I was like, scale 1 to 10, how haunted is this place? Because I'm at a 10. Like,
yeah.
This place is definitely haunted. Like there's fireplaces in the room, like in your rooms.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's ghosts for sure.
Yeah, ghosts.
There's blood on my wall.
An old lady with like in a nightgown, like tried to hand me like
a set of creepy twins at the end of each hall.
Yeah. Ugh, God, that movie was scary.
Yeah.
But those are things that parents aren't, for the most part, going to these conferences or getting this education, being armed with this this information. And that's part of the reason why, I mean, I personally feel strongly, maybe your friend in the Midwest disagrees, Sarah, that this is so necessary to have in schools because it's not just something that you sit your kid down with one time and have a convo explaining to them, you know, what's a penis and what's a vagina, because that's not even
scratching the surface of like what is actually real like in the world.
Yeah.
Like the idea of gender as a spectrum was never taught to us. Like that's something I still have to trying to educate myself about, because number one, because there's more information constantly, you know, coming forth about that. But yeah, it's just that was not even on the radar. So I would, I'm glad to know that that is now for kids, at least in
New York,
at least in your particular school.
Right. Well, it doesn't ever seem to come up with parents until there's like a quote unquote problem, like until you have like a gay kid or a trans kid or a kid who, you know, is like won't stop masturbating. You know, that's when you then seek help, but like, or advice at least. And they come from weird places. Like my mom goes to, through the Catholic Church, she goes to like an LGBT, like parent holistic, like discussion group. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think this information just needs to be like pervasive throughout, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just when your kid won't stop masturbating in front of the family.
Wait,
or like,
what do you do if that happens though? What's the answer to that?
Yeah.
You just have to say it's totally normal. It's fine that you're doing it, but this is a very private thing. And so you don't do it in front of people.
My fear is having a son who's just leaving jizz all over the house. Like, I'm terrified of that being in my future.
I think it'll happen.
Yeah.
I know.
Like most boys,
And my nephew just turned 10, and I'm everywhere. Just thinking, like, ooh, my sister's got a rude awakening coming pretty soon when he starts hitting puberty. And it's
there's that quote in the movie Bridesmaids when she's talking.
Oh, yeah. I cracked a blanket. I know.
Oh, God.
Because everyone that I've talked to that either grew up with like a little brother or has... Has raised boys is like, that's happening.
Where and it comes up in class. And I just say, like, if you are able to keep your commitments in life, you're able to do your homework, hang out with your friends when you want to, like go to your activities, all of that. If you're keeping up with your commitments in life, then you're fine, right?
Yeah.
If you are like saying, oh, my friend wants to hang out, but I'm just going to stay home and masturbate, like that's... Okay, every once in a while, but you know, really,
I mean,
then you
it.
Might be doing it too much. Oh, sure. Like, oh, sorry, I'm busy.
I've canceled plans.
I've got some something else to do.
Yeah, right. I'm very efficient.
So, for any of our listeners who are not lucky enough to go to school in a more progressive area or has sex education, do you have any resources that you would recommend that are online that they can seek out that are reliable or trustworthy?
Yeah, Planned Parenthood has a whole curriculum, and they have them for educators. They have a teen website. They also have stuff specifically for parents.
They can take all my money.
Yes. Oh, all of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
There are teen publications. There's one out of New Jersey. Answer has one called Sex Etc., which like is teen written, teen produced.
Oh, cool.
And it also has parent stuff. They also just released a whole new set of videos called Amaze, amaze.org, which has really cute, really fun stuff. Like they have music videos, one in particular that like I have not shown my seventh grade boys because I'm terrified that they're just going to sing this song nonstop. But it basically goes, that's how the boner grows. That's how the boner grows. It's not really a bone. So,
yes.
Yeah.
I love this.
So I have
my new ringtone.
They're right there too. They're right. They're doing anatomy right now, and I'm just like, God, do I do this to myself? Do I do this to everybody?
They're gonna sing it on loop forever,
nonstop.
Yeah.
But yeah, Amaze has great stuff. It's there. I mean, it's all out there. If you just Google and you look at all the EDUs and the .orgs, those are your key.
Great.
Advocates for Youth. I mean, they're all out there. They're doing the work for not a lot of money, but they're doing it. And it's all about comprehensive sex ed. Again, abstinence absolutely being a component, but like, let's give them all the information that's age appropriate and developmentally appropriate, obviously, but just so they have this info.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Great.
Yeah.
Well, we like to end our episodes with a random question, though it's not always so random, but because of the movie Bex, I was wondering, what's everybody's favorite LGBTQ movie, even though we know that Sarah's seen one and a half plus Uptown Girls.
Oh my God. I'm gonna let you guys go first because I'm racking my brain to think of one that I finished that I actually liked.
For me, one of the first movies I remember like really being like ding ding ding, and now I go back and I'm like, God, this really isn't that good of a movie. It is good, but it's it was Kissing Jessica Stein.
Yeah.
It was like the first time I saw like two women like empowered, like trying this thing, like being a little sexually risky and free. And I must have watched that film 20 times after the first time I saw it. And it was kind of just this, like, gay memory I have of being like, why do I like this movie so much? Yeah. This is so funny. Yeah.
I need to see a cut that doesn't have the men in it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it becomes super heteronormative at the end. But yeah.
Mine, I would have to say, is The Hours, which.
Oh, okay.
Which I guess is a little bit of a.
I've read the book, but I've not seen the movie.
Weird pick, but I liked that it portrayed a lesbian relationship as just being like very normal and not this thing that had to be like called out or made a big deal about or was necessarily like a big plot device. I mean, it's a bunch of different storylines, but for that one particularly, I was like, oh, this looks and feels so normal and wonderful. And it was the first time that it wasn't like, oh my God, lesbians, like what happens here? And it's also just like cinematically and everything, a very... Yeah. Great movie. And then a lot of the other storylines also have queer and gay elements to it. So it's kind of a...
Yeah. I think the movie was not overtly a gay movie, but Fried Green Tomatoes.
Yeah.
The book was like... Gay. I thought the book was gay as hell. Like, it was so clear, the relationship between Iggy Threadgood and... I forgot the other character's name. But, like, I knew... like. I remember reading the book I've read the book a couple times, read it when I was like 17, and then I read it when I was like 30. And it was very...
I need to read it. I've only seen the movie.
The book is worth it for sure. Because there's a lot more of that like kind of love aspect of
why...
Well,
they had sex, didn't they, in the book?
I think they did. I think there was definitely some sort of... Because I remember that was like when I read that as a teenager, I was very much attached to this work of fiction. But I wish that the movie had done more justice to the, you know, and kind of to the book in that way. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it was made in like the mid-90s, so that's probably why that was the way it was. But that movie was, that really kind of like, that whole devotion that Iggy had to her throughout all those phases in her life was extremely relatable.
Yeah.
And I would say that's my favorite.
So just because I'm a movie nerd, side note, I was watching that with my mom when I was home in the Midwest. And I'm the nerd who like gets on IMDb and like wants to read all about
the
backstory.
I do that all the time. Drives my girlfriend insane.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh my God, did you know? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was sitting there with my mom and she was blown away that this was a gay movie, right? And then it said in the like, did you know part that Mary Louise Parker and Mary Stuart Masterson advocated for that sex scene. They said, like, we want to do this.
Okay.
And they just couldn't get it done production-wise.
Yeah.
So that scene where they, like, smear jam all over each other is the scene where that's supposed to be the sex
scene.
That's
a good metaphor.
That's the best we can get in the jam. In the early 90s.
I think all lesbians have done, It's part of what
the spread in the channel.
Look at those jam spreaders.
Yeah.
Just walking around together like we don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. Spreading that jam.
That's a movie. Mary Louise Parker is hot. She's so hot. I think I would like to see a well-done reboot of that movie.
Yeah.
That would be a movie that I wouldn't be immediately like, ugh, like roll my eyes about them.
Can Mary Louise Parker still be in?
Yes. No, same actors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Except that Jessica Tandy's been dead for like 20 years.
Yeah. That sucks. like I think that would be an interesting one to make now in the context of like what we can do in film now.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you made like a modern day one.
Yeah. Maybe. Let's work on that.
Yeah.
I'm super stoked about that new the one with what's her face from The Notebook, Rachel McAdams.
She
plays a Hasidic woman, and the British actress, what's her name? I forget her name.
Is this a lesbian movie?
Yeah, so the British actress, so I can't remember her name, she gets kicked out of the Hasidic community because they had a relationship, and then she comes back because somebody died. So then there's like all this like sexual tension, and there is definitely like push up against the brick wall kind of make out scene between the two of them in the trailer.
I'm in.
Rachel Weisz. Yeah.
Oh,
what?
Yeah.
Rachel Weisz and Rachel McAdams. Yeah. The Rachels. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I will be seeing this movie.
Oh yeah. I'm super stoked. And Ellen Page has a queer movie coming out with blanking on names. Kate Mara.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. So
she's going to be,
I'm in too. Yeah.
I missed the one with her and Julianne Moore. How was that one?
Oh, it was really sad at the end. I like cried into my tits.
Still Alice?
Yeah.
No,
not Still Alice. Free
Hell. Free Hell. Yeah. But free true hell. Story. True yeah. story. Yeah. Based on
I can't see that.
Yeah. Yeah. I know the story of it, and I just kind of missed it when it came
out. Why did I think
out,
it was Still Alice? Up. Like,
because she was.
That would be too incredibly. Like, imagine intertwining those plot lines.
Yeah.
Alzheimer's and
landmark
cancer.
Case that she had, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And gay.
Yeah. And gay.
Oh, man.
That's too much. That's a CW film. That's a straight to the CW miniseries.
Karina, because you've seen a lot of movies, what's your favorite? Carol. All right. Yeah. Someone had to say Carol.
You know, when you watch Carol on an airplane, they cut the sex scene.
Yeah.
What?
My old roommate David was like, he called me. He's like, have you seen Carol? Because, of course, I'm gay and I've seen it.
Right.
I was like, yeah. He's like, does something happen in that hotel room? And I was like, yeah, they do it. Like, what?
Yeah, what do you mean?
He's like, yeah, I was on a plane and it just, like, ended. And I was like, that's bullshit. Like, oh. No way.
Wait.
That's not cool.
Please tell me that I missed some extra sexy stuff in Battle of the Sexes then, because...
Did you watch it on a plane?
I did watch it on a plane.
You absolutely... did.
No,
wait.
No,
you might have.
They showed,
they
like...
They didn't get... It wasn't that... It was mostly making out.
Yeah, okay. I feel like they showed all of that.
There was some, like, in bed naked making out, but it wasn't, like, you didn't see anything. It was all implied. It was, like, shoulders up.
Do you remember that movie that Helen Hunt did where she was, like, a sex therapist?
Yes.
So I watched that on a plane. And she's, like, she basically helps this man who's completely disabled.
Yeah.
Like... have a sexual encounter and have a sexual relationship. And there's like scenes where she's like getting on top of him and like it's very overtly sexual.
Yeah.
I watched that movie not knowing.
The Sessions. Yeah.
What is it called?
The Sessions.
The Sessions, yeah. Not knowing how overt it was going to be. And a nun was sitting next to me. And I was just like, oh my God.
I mean, there's full on, there's like naked Helen Hunt in it. And had I known that sooner, I would have seen it a lot faster.
I wish I had something to
Helen
write
Hunt
with.
Can get it.
Helen Hunt can. Always get it. She could in the 90s. She could now.
Yeah.
I was at a restaurant in the Village maybe 6 years back, and my friend goes, don't freak out, but Helen Hunt just walked in. I'm like, how do I not freak out? And she's just like, stop staring. I'm like, I don't want to be a creep, but like, it's Helen Hunt.
It's Helen Hunt.
It's Helen Hunt.
Yeah.
All right. Well.
So, Alyssa, you have a show coming up?
I do. St. Patrick's Day, 9 o'clock. Pete's Candy Store in Williamsburg.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Venue.
And then I head out on tour to the West Coast. So I'll be in Portland, where the movie just got released, or it's getting released. This weekend? Did it get released this weekend? I think it did.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it came out on Friday at the Hollywood Theater, and I'll be playing there on the 24th, and then Seattle, and then Olympia, Washington. And then I head to London for the film as well.
Great.
That's so awesome. Yeah, that's
everyone download break. Max.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazon or iTunes.
Yeah.
Download it. Yeah. See it if you're in Portland. Go see it in theaters if it's playing at a theater by you. And check out Alyssa's music online. Your website
AlyssaRobbins.com. Two B's and Robbins.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or you get somebody else.
Yeah.
Right. There's an Alyssa Robbins with one B.
There is. And there was an Alyssa Robbins actually spelled the same way. She was a singer-songwriter in Brooklyn and she had died. So there's this whole memorial site to her, and I got a lot of hits for that. They were like, what? Like, I thought this person was dead. I was like, no, I'm the live one. I'm still alive.
It'd be funny if you started shows like that. Like, you may have thought I was dead.
Yeah.
But here I am.
The ghost of Alyssa Robbins.
Oh, man. You can rate and review us on iTunes, and please leave us 5 stars and a nice review if you enjoy listening to us. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Our handle is Dyking Out on everything. Send us an email, dykingout@gmail.com. Give us all your money on Patreon.
or just a tiny bit of it every month.
Yeah, just a tiny bit. Whatever you can afford if you like the podcast and want to see us expand and do all sorts of cool stuff with that. Patreon.com/dykingout. Patreon, that's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, in case you're like, what
the
is
hell
she
is
saying?
Patreon?
Yeah. And, you know, we put 50 episodes out a year, and if you just give like $1 a month, that's like less than a quarter an episode. That's
yes, that is a lot of math, but I will take your word for it.
Yeah.
All right,
it's my fast lesbian math.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening, Alyssa. Thanks for being here.
It's been really
awesome to have you here, and I hope everyone dykes out with us again next week.
All right, bye.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's H-Y-P-E-R-T-H-E-T-I-C-A-L.